Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi everybody, before we get into the podcast here, just to let you know, we are back in Cork's Opera House on August the 22nd to open the Cork Podcast Festival.
Which is an absolute honour, and myself and James are thrilled to be a part of such a great night, particularly when you have so many fantastic podcasts coming from Cork on the night and the week as well.
Yeah, no, listen, it's great to be part of the podcast scene. And we've a great guest on the night too, a friend of ours, Brezzy, a mental health advocate who's got a great story. Among other things, he's played Munster or rugby with Leinster, and he had a panic attack live on TV, and he does his own show now around his own journey. So it's going to be powerful.
Yeah, he's just going to talk about his story growing up and when it all started for him in relation to his mental health, and how he came through it, and what he does today around it. No, he does a lot of work within schools today and helps children to be able to cope much, much better with their own mental health. And he creates programs and stuff like that, and he does a lot of funding. So it should be a fantastic night.
Yeah, we'll have a bit of entertainment, a bit of music, and a bit of a crack as well. So I hope to see you there August the 22nd. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.ie or Cork Opera House box office. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
Thanks.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Two Norries podcast. I am your host James Leonard, joined as always by my good friend Timmy Long.
Hi everyone.
We're back up in Ballymun with Laura Dowling, the fabulous pharmacist. How are we keeping?
I'm great.
Great to have you here. Thanks for coming to meet us.
I'm delighted to meet you. It's great. Yeah, it's nice around here as well. It's a nice area that you've...
Yeah, this is a great venue as well. We did a podcast in the theatre just out in the other room before. It's a beautiful venue, nice and intimate. If you're ever thinking about doing a live, you have your own podcast.
I do, yeah. The Laura Dowling experience. The Laura Dowling experience. I just went with Ashridis and I just put my name on it. Yeah,
where did the experience come from? Is there a meaning behind it?
I suppose, because I'm always interested in talking to people, more than yourselves, have interesting backstories or interesting jobs and careers. I'm quite health focused, so I just thought it would be like my experience of them, or I just let them on to talk about their lives and their work, and seems to go well. We hit number one there in the Apple Podcasts.
It's
great. It's a nice little feeling when that happens.
It is, and it's great when every so often you'd have a look just to see how you're doing. You know, when you see Jay Shetty, and know if you're up around him, because you know he's the biggest health and wellness in the world.
Him or Huberman, you know, your man,
Andrew Huberman. If you're up around there, you're like, yes. Yeah. No, even though we're a tiny little fraction of their audience.
Yeah, of course.
But you can imagine the numbers they're getting on their podcast, if they're number one across the world. You know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, huge.
Great. Podcasting is great, though, and it's just to be able to throw a mic on the table and have a chat with somebody, and then people access it.
Do you know what it's actually like? You know the way in AA and NA you have an open meeting where anybody can go in, and you don't have to be an addict or an alcoholic or whatever. You can go in and sit down and listen to someone's story. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same thing. It's open to everybody, you know?
Absolutely. And I kind of like the long form as well. So you can go really deep into discussions, and if people like them, they can chat away, and they can listen away, and if it's too long for them, they can turn off. I find with mine, like some people, they'll listen to them over the course of a couple of days or a couple of walks they go on or something. Yeah, so
But take us back, where are you from? That's an Ardy accent, anyway.
I know, but I was born and bred in Dublin. My parents are from the north. So my dad is from Belfast and my mum was from Larne. And they moved down here when they got married around 1978. And then I was born in 1980. So I grew up with them. Obviously, they still sound like they just stepped off the train from the north. But my uncle lived with us too because he was orphaned. That's my mum's brother. He was orphaned at the age of 12. Both our parents had died. So he lived with us for like my first 10 years of life too. So I had three people in the house that had really strong accents. And as a result, I have one. But my brothers and my sister don't have it. They kind of sanitized theirs over the years. We were slagged that my dad was must have been in the IRA in school. So my brothers and sister decided they'd you know, develop a Dublin accent, whereas I was like, oh, I don't care. I've always been like that.
That's
I don't care.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That you have your Nardy accent because you're actually born and raised in Dublin.
Yeah.
And what were we at school for you? Were we always bright in school? Do you know what led you down the pharmacy route?
So I always liked achieving well in school. Like I was always kind of maybe competing with myself. I was always a bit of a messer in school though. So I remember like when I got my Leaving Cert results, one of my teachers turned around and went, "What? You got that?" So, but I studied.
How many points do you need to get into pharmacy?
I think back then you needed about 550 or something. I got like 570 back then. It was like, but I was always like that, a high achiever, but I failed miserably in first year then in college. So I went from studying really hard for the Leaving Cert and doing really well. And then I went into college and it was like a 40-hour lecture week. So it was 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, for 4 years in Trinity. And in the, you know, I went into first year thinking, oh, sure, listen, I'm so clever, I got all A's in my Leaving Cert. But I was, so I didn't go to lectures. I met my now husband, then boyfriend, and I just hung out with him for the year and failed miserably. My poor parents thought I'd gone like totally off the rails, which I suppose I had, but I think I probably needed to. But then I studied for the repeats and I got them. Yeah, I never failed another exam again. It scared me.
You're studying for pharmacy. Are you learning about compounds and chemistry? Like what's it like?
Yeah. So you're learning all about there's four main subjects. It's pharmaceutical chemistry, pharmaceutics, which is the drug delivery, how drugs will be delivered into the body from, say, a tablet. You know, you've tablets, you've injections, so all of those kind of things. How they're dispersed in the body. Then pharmaceutical chemistry is like the makeup, how drugs actually work in the body. So say your body is covered in receptors. So how a drug works is it attaches to the receptor and like changes chemical formula that way. So that's all pharm chem. Then you have pharmacology, how drugs work in the body. And then you have pharmacognosy, which is the study of plants and herbs and how they have, I suppose, shaped the way we use medicines today. So I was always massively into that, hence how I kind of brought out my own products. So yeah, it's all that. So I loved health, but I didn't like blood and guts.
How does, for example, someone's suffering with their mental health, stress, anxiety, whatever, and their doctor says, here, we have a great tablet here, use this. And
it's called diazepam.
No, something more like an antidepressant that's working in the background. What does that actually do to the body and the mind?
So the antidepressants that are used nowadays are the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or the SNRIs, which is selective serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. So, and what they do is basically they just stop the synapses in the brain reuptaking serotonin, which means there's more serotonin to work in the body. We know that serotonin is like the happy hormone, and that's what those do. So often if someone's put on an antidepressant, just is to raise their serotonin levels. But very much one size doesn't fit all. And I think there is a study being done in Trinity at the minute where they're trying to actually tailor antidepressant care for an individual rather than just slapping everyone on an SSRI. It's like deciding what will actually work in your body, but this will take years of work to actually get it right. It's more targeted care for people rather than like, because antidepressants don't work for some people, or they might work for some time and then wear off, and they can have side effects too. So, and then, you know, they can, and the side effects can be, people don't like them. People can have sexual dysfunction with the side effects, and that can be tough on people. I would often get messages about that on my Instagram saying I'm on an antidepressant, and while I'm like okay on it, I can't have sex, or I can't have orgasm or something like that. How do I, is there anything that can be done? So short of coming off the antidepressant, it's difficult for people
it disconnects people as
well. Yeah, it does. It feel a little bit numb sometimes as well. Now, like antidepressants can work really well. I'm not saying that they're in any way bad. Like they can be absolutely life changing for people. But I suppose that's the important thing. Like with medicines, there always is side effects that, you know, and some people may not experience the side effects, but you always have to kind of watch out for that.
Recently, maybe Christmas, I was diagnosed with ADHD and I recently had a second assessment and the doctor said that there was something else going on for me as well. And he said it was in relation to stress and anxiety. You know, there was other stuff he said as well. But I just want to get into this. So, right, because it was a doctor, psychiatrist, I decided to take his advice in it. I was on the Concerta medication as well. It was on a high dose, started off, and the lower dose went up to 108 milligrams. And I found myself really disconnected from myself, okay? Then I went on this and I was even more disconnected. And I went up seeing the doctor for the second consultation and I knew that, right, there's actually nothing wrong with me. You know, I lived my whole life with the ADHD and the stress and anxiety. And when I found, I decided to come off the medication, the Concerta, the antidepressant that he gave me, I felt connected back into myself because I'm very, very connected to my emotions.
Yeah.
I'm very connected. I wasn't. And I had to do a lot of work on myself. You know, it, like, there's such a massive variety. And I was told to stay on them for a month and they'd work then and I'd feel brand new. Yeah. I think it were called ventiviloxone or something.
Venlafaxine.
And I think I started off when the lower dose and I was titrating up.
Yeah.
But I stopped just after, you know, because I felt I was starting to lose myself a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I just came away from the whole lot of it. And I think the most important fact for me, learning from all of that, I sat down one day and I just had a conversation with myself and I said, like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
You know, but what I was trying to do was find a label to be able to justify where I was feeling instead of, I was starting to lose the little bit of acceptance that I had around how I was feeling. So I just stopped.
You feel better after.
I feel 110% better. Yeah. You know, I thought everything was going to be great. I struggled with going back to education, doing a master's, and I was struggling with the focus and everything else. And that's why I got the diagnosis and they put me on the Concerta because I thought that would help me to be more focused.
Did it help?
It helped a bit.
Okay.
Okay. But what happened was this. I was looking for more of a kick.
Yeah.
Or the Concerta. So before I knew it, I was at a high dose of the medication.
Yeah.
By myself, because I titrated myself. But I also found myself drinking 5, 6, 7 cans of fucking Monster as well on top of that.
Yeah.
And shots of coffee.
You'd be wired.
I was completely off my fucking game. Completely. I looked at a podcast, unconscious to me, because I didn't even know what was going on, unconscious to me. And I look back in a podcast we'd done recently there and I was looking at myself and I think B was after doing it, or producer, and I looked at the video and I could see the tension on my jaws.
My jaws
were tension, you know, I was like this and I said, fucking hell. And I suppose, like, because I was so connected to feeling the way I was and being able to accept the emotional stuff in my body and then going on this stuff and saying, you know, I knew straight away that this was not the right move for me. You know, yeah. I knew straight away. But what is your honest opinion of maybe antidepressants and these forms of medications for people? What's the best way to, you know, some people need medication, let's be honest.
But is it 100%? So I think that we live in a society where we're quick to medicate, okay? Be it for pain, for depression, for, you know, any kind of symptoms. Medication plays an absolute fundamental role in people's lives. But I do think that there may be that disconnect, like what you're saying, like, you know, even in the case, like we're saying, there's an anti-obesity medicine out now as an injection. And people can get it if they're over a certain BMI and they have underlying health conditions. And that's brilliant for them. But then you have other people that want to go on that anti-obesity medication because they just want to lose a few pounds. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's difficult. And I think that medication has done such great things for mental health in particular. But then again, people need to be tapped into themselves and their own emotion and go for the counselling and know what suits them. Like you said, you felt spaced out and not yourself, and that's no way to go through life either. But when it comes to, say, major depression, where someone could have suicidal tendencies, if they aren't on antidepressants, then absolutely antidepressants are so very important.
Yeah.
And it's about constantly checking in. Like whenever I would give a first time antidepressant medication out, the person would always say to me, oh, I'm not going to be on these long. Or like, how quickly can I get off them? And I just try and say to them, listen, you need to actually see if they work first. Mm-hmm. You need to build up to when you are feeling yourself again, and then when you are, you need to stay on them for a certain length of time, like be it 6 months, so you're really feeling good. And then when you're coming off them, you can't just like come off them like that. You really need to titrate down. So there's a lot of medicine management around it that people don't understand. It's not a case of just starting something and coming off it. You can do yourself damage in that way. You need to liaise with your pharmacist, liaise with your doctor.
You're not, and with me, it's like, because of the ADHD, I get very anxious and stressed because I'm 100 miles an hour when I'm at work. I don't give myself much time to get anywhere. I should be somewhere for 3. I'm still in the front room eating my whatever. Still have to go up and have a shower. And in my head, it's telling you, you still get there on time. I'm not thinking about traffic.
As much into your day, like literally every single second.
Everything.
Before,
absolutely everything. And I get very anxious and stressed. And I said, this is going to be a great way to help me with the anxiety and stress. Okay. So that's why the meds came in. Mm. Didn't work for me. Grand. I'm the kind of person, I'll try it.
Yeah.
Always try it. If it works, great. It's just another step to help me to kind of get to know myself and to help me to move on. What do you think, like, what is one of the most natural ways to be able to help people with a little bit of stress and anxiety, just in relation to the same stuff that I am, you know, the impatience a little bit?
Yeah, so I think that, like, the meditation and yoga and exercise is huge, and sleep is huge. Like, people don't put enough emphasis on sleep in the Western world, I don't think. I think it's all right, let's go, mm-hmm. and do as much as we can in the day. So sleep was huge. And then, you know, the reason why I actually developed my own brand was because people were coming into me all the time for years, for like 20 years, looking for something natural to help with stress and sleep. So I was always sending them around the corner to the health food shop, because we didn't sell the stuff in the pharmacies, like things like ashwagandha, L-theanine, chamomile, those kinds of capsules. So I'd always send them around with a list as long as their arms. Then I was like, feck it, I'm going to make this myself. I was good at chemistry when I was in college. I could do these myself. So that's how it developed. So there's lots of people out there that want something natural now, and also something they can potentially take alongside their medications too. So that is actually, so it's interesting you're saying that. It's actually the reason why I started my brand, was because off that, people that just wanted something like what you're suggesting. But, you know, it is funny how some people will react to medicines and some will very well, and then some it just does not suit. And I think ADHD is kind of like the topic du jour at the minute, isn't it? There's a lot of people out there that are undiagnosed, lots of undiagnosed adults, a lot of recently diagnosed adults, but more importantly, there's loads of kids out there that aren't being looked after because our mental health services are shocking in this country. And what we see is with kids, particularly young kids with ADHD, if they're undiagnosed, they have that busy mind that you're talking about. And that busy mind can be calmed by alcohol, by cannabis, by drug misuse.
Yeah.
So they're self-medicating from like in their early teens, late teens. And then if they're not minded and looked after properly when they're young, diagnosed, put on medication if necessary, or given the proper supports, or their family's given the proper supports, that can be the trajectory for them. And that's a real worry. Like young men ending up in prison, making silly decisions, impulsive decisions because of ADHD. Yeah.
And I'm impulsive as it is. Can you imagine me no one just after that, just taking a load of drugs and alcohol? Yeah. Can you imagine how impulsive I'd be?
Yeah.
Right? And I'll tell you how. I've often just sat down on the couch inside the house 1 minute, an hour later I'm in an airport going on to getting on a flight to go somewhere else.
Okay.
Or I'm halfway up the country or somewhere else. It's just, that is completely mad. If I get one thought into my head, there's no questioning the thought.
Yeah.
It's just questioning whatever I'm going to do or where or how or whatever. It's just so mad. And I can understand that impulsiveness massively. And my wife, Nicole, she turned around to me and she said, we're trying to save, but we're so much on at the moment, we're trying to save a few quid. And she says, how are we ever supposed to spend anything, save anything with you?
Yeah.
She's like, everything, you just spend it. You just, just go and spend it. And she's right.
Yeah.
She's right. I had that kind of, and my mentality around that then is if you have it, spend it.
Yeah. I know, and enjoy it. Fair enough. And that's the thing with ADHD, though. It's those impulsive decisions, but like making stupid decisions or dumb, someone said it to me, it's making dumb decisions all the constantly and even being reprimanded for it, but then continuously doing them. So you have a boy that makes a mistake once or twice and ends up like stealing something or ends up in jail or ends up doing something when he's on drugs. You know, that trajectory for his life is so very different from someone who might be able to afford to go to a private psychiatrist and get their child diagnosed. So that's, I have a huge bugbear with that because I know there's so many kids that aren't being minded or looked after. So you have two kids from two different walks of life, one in inner city centre, Dublin, one out in the leafy suburbs, both the same intelligence, but they just can't access, one of them can't access care.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to go on and have the better life?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think the services are there.
No, they're not.
I haven't. Like, you wouldn't believe the process I had to go through. I done my first assessment online with a doctor online, and that didn't work out. Okay.
Yeah.
That cost me €1,000. I wasn't comfortable with everything that worked out there. So I went on and I done it again. Cost me another €1,000. I went away and I got an ADHD coach to help me to understand what was going on for me and how to manage medications and stuff like that. It ended up nearly €3,000, something that we didn't really have, but it was something that I needed to get done to be able to help me to understand things a little bit more. So what I kept coming across was in Cork, there was something like an 18 month waiting list to see a psychiatrist for ADHD and other stuff. In Dublin, there were there, I got in contact with one, and let's just say after that, I just decided that, you know, I'm probably better off the way I was.
Yeah.
You know, better off. So I stopped the whole process and I just left it.
Yeah.
I left it. I think we need the right medical professionals in this country. Okay. People that understand their job, understand their work, to be able to diagnose people in the right way in this country. I don't think it's...
There isn't enough. Like, I think there's a couple, I think there's a handful even, not even, of ADHD specialists in the country. And like you say, the waiting lists are huge. And meanwhile, those kids are getting older. So, you know, you can, if you catch someone at 13, 14, that's very different to catching someone at 17, 18 when they've already started to make those poor decisions and that. And, you know, you have less control over your child too as they get older. So, yeah, I think it's terrible, the situation that we are in with our mental health services.
We spoke earlier on about the body being full of receptors.
Yeah.
What happens to my body when I take alprazolam, Xanax, or diazepam? Why does it make life... I'm talking about James now in addiction. You don't need that stuff today.
Yeah.
But back then, my whole life was consumed around finding doctors to give me prescriptions and find the pharmacies that would cash them. And it was always the alprazolam, which is Xanax, diazepam, Valium, Rohypnol, DF1-1-ACE, dihydrocodone. When I ingest, and I know the codeine is different to the benzo, but when I ingest a Valium or a Xanax, what is that doing to me? Like, what's the receptor? Like, how does it calm me down and kind of kill the anxiety and the fear and stuff like that?
Yeah, it works on the brain to do that and to just calm the nervous system. But it, and like, for what it's worth, those Anzicam and diazepam, like, they were a very safe drug when they were first brought out in the 1950s, I think it was. They were considered to be the housewife's friend. It's literally like, you know, a woman with whatever, many kids. You know, women didn't have as many rights back then. We had to, you know, wait for our husbands to come home or whatever like that. And life was probably pretty tough for a lot of women. And the Valium got them through the day with all the kids and all the housework and everything. And it's a very safe drug. They replaced barbiturates, which were also equally as, like, would zone you out, but they were dangerous. Whereas diazepam, you need to take an awful lot of it. Even if you do take an awful lot of it, it's very hard to OD on diazepam. It's when people take it with alcohol and other drugs that they're the real issues. So it calms the body down considerably. But what it can do as well is it can make you less in touch with your emotions. So say people might be prescribed Anzicam or diazepam if someone dies on, you know, for grief, but they feel afterwards then that they didn't properly grieve that person at that time, and they may need to go through that process again. So while it can calm you down and numb you, it's numbing those emotions that, and you know yourself, being in recovery, if you don't deal with those emotions.
Yeah.
They will come up eventually, you know.
I do need more as well to get the same effect.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've experienced, and I know other people have similar experiences, there's no science behind this now, I think. But if I was on 90 D10s a month, right, that would be my monthly prescription. And sometimes the pharmacy mightn't have any D10s and they might give you 180 D5s.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not the same. Like, the board 10, like two D5s is the same as one D10.
Yeah.
It's the 10 milligrams of the diazepam.
Yeah.
But when you take them, it doesn't have the same effect on you.
Does it not?
No, it doesn't. And when you're coming off a D10, like when you're, if you take 10 D10s, right, or 20 D10s, and when you're coming around, it's not a great feeling.
Yeah.
When you take 20 D5s and you're coming around, you get very suicidal.
Okay.
You get very suicidal.
So you see, so when you say that to me, right, so technically,
it doesn't make
it
sense.
It should be the exact same, yeah, right? However, I do very much believe in it, the person's perception of what's happening to them. Yeah, but it's also, it can be very real to you, you know, and people that are on psychiatric medication in particular have very sensitive brains. Like I would always say, you know, someone that has depression or has bipolar or has a psychiatric illness, they're very sensitive. So even when we're swapping over generics to people, like I would have had patients over the years where you try to swap a generic in because it's a cheaper drug,
yeah,
et cetera.
Like a Clorox instead of a Xanax.
And they say, sorry, I'm not getting, this isn't the same. I'm actually, this is, I'm, my symptoms are coming back. I'm slipping a bit. And you may have people that say, well, that can't be the case because it's the exact same thing. But I absolutely disagree. People can be very, very sensitive to whatever brand they're used to taking. Yeah. And there is a margin of error with generics as well. So there is like a 1-3% where it could be either side of the
And they don't have
coin.
The same street value. If you're trying to sell a man, the Xanax don't sell the same as the Xanax.
Do they not? That's gas, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. But as well, people are very specific. Like if they're looking for that purple tablet that is Upjohn 90 and you give them a white tablet that says a G, like in their head, it's not the same, even though it's the same
Alprazolam. Yeah.
But it can mess up their psyche around it.
I tell you, I'm getting passionate the other way.
I know. I spend a lot of time.
I'm impressed with all the lingo. D10s, the D5s. I'm like, you're speaking my language.
Yeah, I know. But back in the day, anything, Upjohn's was like a generic term then, you know, Upjohn Pharmaceutical, Halcyon was another one. Interestingly enough, we used to take Halcyon, we used to call them charge sheets because they wouldn't make you high, but they'd cause a blackout. And when you're drinking and you're taking them, a lot of crazy shit would happen and you wake up. I hadn't heard of Halcyon for years. Do you know the last I heard of it?
Yeah.
Did you watch the Jeffrey Dahmer episode thing on Netflix?
No, I didn't.
Well, go. It's very graphic. Okay. But he's a serial killer in Milwaukee, right? But he was murdering homosexuals in Milwaukee. He was spiking them with a Halcyon and they were blacking out and he was murdering them and stuff like that. But you know, like, how do pharmacists deal with drug seeking behaviour, aggression, stuff like that? Have you ever had that experience?
So I've worked in pharmacies all over Dublin, but my last number of years were spent in Stillorgan and Dublin. So I didn't have many methadone patients in there, but I have had over the years, definitely. So how pharmacists deal with it. So drug seeking activity is very tricky. So you have the drug seeking activity where people are looking for, say, codeine over the counter and you know that they might have an issue with it. And then there's the other drug seeking activity where people are using forged scripts. Now, it isn't as common now because we do have that health mail system, so things can come electronically, but there's still people that would photocopy scripts and stuff. And I probably would have been caught out on a number of occasions myself, maybe dispensing it once. But generally, a pharmacist can tell whether or not a script, certainly if it's handed in, whether or not it's forged or not. Yeah, I've always dealt with it. So first of all, I have heard, like, I mean, I did have a friend of mine was refused to give someone a prescription once and gave it back to him and says, I'm refusing to dispense this because I know it's a forgery. And then this pharmacist then maybe a week later was walking in Dublin city centre and they got a punch in the face by the person that they'd refused the drugs to. Mm-hmm. So I've always been like the first protection.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is my colleagues and myself. So what I would normally say is, I just go out and I'd say, I think that you may need to go back to the doctor with this prescription. So I'm saying it, but I'm not accusing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then keeping myself safe too, because that's really important, you know. But I do always think that people that have drug issues, like, they need to be shown a lot more compassion by healthcare professionals and by Joe Public in general.
Do you know if I went away and I got a prescription that had the Xanax and D10s and Rohypnol and all this stuff on it, and I went into the chemist and you didn't give me that medication, like, that's a very volatile situation you're going to create there, do you know?
It is.
But have you ever come across a situation where, like, back in the day for me, I used to go to a lot of quack doctors. It was cash, you know, and a private prescription. Then there's no recording, really. Like, you don't need PPS numbers or medical card numbers. It's just a white slip of paper or to a chemist. Did you ever come across a situation where you knew the doctor was not of, you know, he wasn't adherent to, I suppose, the Hippocratic Oath? And, like, how do you deal with that morally and ethically?
So I have had two situations like that in my career. So normally, like, doctors are, and I would feel for doctors too, if they've been looking after someone and they, you know, they're almost being, not even being bribed, but they could be threatened themselves.
Yeah.
So there was one situation more recent years where I actually phoned the doctor up and said, listen, like, this guy, you know, I'm seeing a lot of prescriptions coming through for these same things. And this person is getting them in numerous chemists, because I knew that he was getting them from the run around the corner, and let it be known that way. There would certainly be, I suppose, pharmacies that would be concerned about certain maybe doctors that were overprescribing it, and they may phone the surgery and see and have to chat with the doctor themselves.
Is there a hierarchy of authority there? Like, would you feel comfortable to, like, would a doctor ever tell you, fucking mind your own business?
I'm sure they would, yeah. Look, I mean, doctors do. Generally, pharmacists have very good relationships with doctors, though, because we, you know, we're two healthcare professionals. We're both different ends of the spectrum, but, you know, there'll be often, like, say, drug errors that we might pick up on a prescription that we just phone the doctor and say, listen, is it this or this? And they, oh, right, sorry, it's that. Thanks for phoning me. So there's that. But yeah, like, I could imagine if a doctor was being phoned up and told, you're prescribing too much diazepam to this person, they might take the hump, or, you know, they may not know. So it can be a delicate situation, but I think it's important, the language that you use around it. You're never accusatory,
Just asking questions.
Yeah, you always say, you know, I've noticed that, but, you know, and you let them kind of hang themselves.
What was going through my head there when you were talking about the description stuff, particularly for the pharmacist, is so they might get away with it. The doctor was, you're not missing a prescription book by any chance. We have a lot of prescriptions coming in here, like, you know.
That's a nice way of doing it. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
It was very hard to forge, because the Latin, some of the numerals are kind of, they're not English. It's not like, you know, Latin, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very special,
There's some very good forgers out there, I would say. I take my hat off to them. They do them very well. But some of them, they just miss something, you know. It's so obvious to my eye what's right and what's wrong. Yeah. But I think it is more difficult for them because of health mail now. But yeah, look, you know, there would also be doctors that you'd be worried about them could be prescribing for themselves too. So, really? Like, doctors aren't immune, they're not immune to pharmacists aren't either. We're not immune to addiction, and sure, we have it at our fingertips too. So I think, yeah, you know, so I think
one
that
for the patient, one for me.
Dealing the mic like that, I know, yeah.
Do you know, so you went on to be a pharmacist, and you worked in that industry for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And so now, at the moment, you have your own brand of
mushrooms.
Fumes.
There's no psilocybin in those, though.
No, not psychoactive.
No.
So you're going into the more natural kind of area of helping people to be with different things. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so as I said earlier, people were always coming into the pharmacy looking for something to help either with energy levels or with immune support or with generally it was stress and anxiety, and I didn't have anything really to give them other than, I suppose, there was rescue remedy, you know, in the pharmacy or whatever. So that's how it started. That's how I built, you know, started working on the products, doing the research and development. And so that's 10 years in the making, you know. And so I came out with my immune product first and my Relax product. And then about 6 months later, I came out with my menopause and perimenopause product called Meno and Peri. So it's, you know, it's kind of nearly overtaken the other two. It's going so well. So it has lion's mane mushroom in it. Okay. So I've always been very interested in the natural side of things. So contemporary medicine is absolutely brilliant and has saved lives, absolutely. But there are also other things that people can do to complement their health. So not instead of, it's more complementary. So I've always been really into traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, which is Indian medicine. That's the use of foods to help. So like, the herbs that I have, the botanical extracts that I have in my Oronor Relax, that's ashwagandha, L-theanine, chamomile, melissa, they've all been used for thousands of years in Ayurvedic medicine to calm the nervous system, to calm you. So they don't actually, they're non-sedating, non-addictive. They calm you down and then they allow you to sleep, or they calm you down and you're that bit less stressed. Same in traditional Chinese medicine. They're big into mushrooms over there. So lion's mane mushroom, like we're all hearing about it now. I put it into my menopause and perimenopause for the brain fog, for the concentration. It's been used in some studies for dementia and Alzheimer's. So there's lots of potential there with mushrooms. So we just need to know how to harness that. And that's what I'm trying to do with my products. But initially, when I first brought them out, I brought them out actually June last year. And so Oronor was going really well. I was getting great reviews for it, but no reviews for shrooms. And I was like, oh, Jesus, Ireland isn't ready for shrooms yet. Yeah. But it was took about 3 to 5 weeks for the reviews for them to start coming in. And people were saying it's great for energy. They're not getting the coughs and colds and sniffles that they're used to. So that's how it all kind of started. But Instagram shadow bans me occasionally when I'm mentioning shrooms. They think I'm trying to sell drugs.
Yeah. That you're tapping into stuff that probably have been used for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Blindby did a podcast there a few months ago. You know, he's big into Irish mythology and stuff like that. But there was this story of people going to this well when their mood was low and stuff like that, you know, to improve their well-being. And they were drinking the water from this specific well. But, you know, a couple of thousand years later, there's a lot of lithium in the water in that well. I'm sure lithium is used.
It's used to help with bipolar disorder. Yeah.
So, like, they were tapping into it. They didn't know what it was. I didn't know. Like, it's like, to turn on the light, you know, you have to press the switch. You don't need to know the mechanics of it. I don't know if I press that switch, the light comes on. If I drink that water, I feel better. It's up to you then to figure out the mechanics of that and the specifics of that. You know, but it's great that they tap into that natural resources, you know.
Yeah.
We did a podcast with a psychiatrist, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. He came up in the last podcast we did as well. And he was a leading psychiatrist around the first trials of Prozac. And he was a pioneer of that. And then he got an awful turn against that whole industry because of the over prescribing of it. But he was saying that in his research, and he has a great book, The Body Keeps the Score, where he details case studies of some of his clients that recovered from trauma using yoga, music, meditation, sport, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Stuff that's free and in the community, reconnecting with people, dance and all this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But like fitness and nutrition is a big part of your routine as well. Mm. So it's not like a tablet is not going to solve everything for you. Like as you said, as part of...
Yeah, it's like, I mean, there's no magic bullet. And I think that we can't just, you know, be shoveling vitamins and minerals into us or supplements or... and not exercise and, you know, not eat healthily and not get out into the fresh air and expect miracles. We need to, it's a full, you know, it's a 360 thing. It's a real holistic, has to be part of the whole body.
What's your opinion on gastric bands and bypasses is kind of a recent phenomenon there. People going to Turkey, you know, medical travel and stuff like that.
So I can understand why people do it because it's going to be cheaper than it is in Ireland. They may not have to have the waiting lists either. I think that obesity in general is a very difficult illness to treat. It's multifaceted. It isn't just a case of people are lazy and shoveling stuff into their mouths. You know, it's one of those things. We're pre-programmed to put on weight. That's why it's difficult to lose weight.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky one. And if someone gets a gastric band, like there's no going back from that. It's so. But for some people, it really works well.
You can't get that band out.
Well, I think that it's... I can't imagine that. Sorry now, I'm not 100%, but I know that, like, you know, when they stomach staple or when they reduce the stomach, I don't think that they can reverse that. And I think that it's also a case of people will reach a certain level of weight loss and they won't go any further. So it's almost like they come to their body reaches an equilibrium.
Yeah.
So they might never be the size 10 that they thought that they could have been.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, that kind of way. So it is multifaceted and it's we're only now scratching the surface of the obesity issue and crisis that we have. And we need to be a lot more, I think we need to use better language around it and more inclusive. Language.
There's a great book about obesity I read recently, Why We Eat Too Much.
Yeah.
And he talks about the role of omega B and omega 3 and omega 6.
Yeah.
And omega 6 being great at storing fat and omega 3 rich diets being great at kind of people, omega 3 rich diets like fresh meat and fish and stuff like that, eating grass-fed stuff and non-natural plants, being rich in omega-3, having less obesity problems.
Yeah.
And people with rich omega-6 diets having more obesity. And he was to saying, you know, omega-6-rich foods, you know them because they have a long shelf life.
And they're all fried, like a lot of them are fried. Like your omega-6 is in a lot of fried foods and that too, yeah. But I think the food industry is... Like, we have to almost do what we did to the food industry, what we did to the tobacco industry. Like, they are so
at
fault. Like, they get away, you know, the advertising to kids. And obesity is creeping up in kids in Ireland too. And I think there's huge statistics over in the States for those, like, so many. Like, I think it's something like 1 in 3 kids are overweight.
Yeah, it's even
over
more,
there. Yeah, and if you have a kid that's overweight, it's difficult. How it's difficult for them to get out of those poor eating habits as they get older. So we have to do something about the food industry and how it's allowed to advertise.
Look, if you walk into any shop anywhere in any part of the country, when you get up to the till, what's in front of your face?
I know.
Every piece of chocolate or jelly or sweet that you could possibly imagine.
Buy a slab of dairy milk for about €2. Yeah.
And so, you can't buy a punnet of strawberries for that.
No, absolutely not.
So they're making, it's not easy. It's particularly if you have 2 kids with you and you're at the counter and they want this, they want that, and you know, it's very difficult. Like, when will we ever get to the day where you might see an apple or a banana?
I know. And as I said, like, it's more expensive to buy a punnet of, it's more expensive to buy a punnet of strawberries than it is to buy a McDonald's Happy Meal sometimes.
Yeah.
So, and if someone doesn't have money, a lot of money or a disposable income, and they have to feed their child, what's going to feed the child? What's going to fill the child up with for most? And then you've generations of families too that don't know how to cook. So if we're not teaching our younger children how to cook for themselves, then it's very difficult to kind of for them to grow into adults that will learn too. So it's all about education as well.
John, with regards men's health, what kind of there's a lot of stuff marketed at men, test natural test boosters, ZMAs and all these other compounds. Are they gimmicks? Are they legit? What ones do you think would be, you know, would you suggest for men to use and to avoid?
So for men in general?
Yeah.
For muscle building and things like that? Or what is it? I don't know what those products you're talking about.
For
testosterone, is it?
Testosterone.
Like when men get older, is it?
And the function.
Is that what you're saying?
Everything else.
Yeah. So what he's saying really is, you know, as men, like you have your Joe Rogan's now and your Dana White's and stuff.
Yes.
Libido.
Oh, libido, of course. Yeah.
You're very open.
Erections. You say the word in front of me. Don't worry.
Not even erection. Erection is fine. It's the will or
the desire.
The desire.
So your libido. Okay.
Yeah, as that decreases. But there's a lot of stuff marketed at men in terms of like different kind of compounds.
I would be, so if it's marketed and it's look, there are ways that you can increase your libido naturally, you know, by, I've just said it, like sleeping, eating well, exercise. That's all part and parcel. But it's also your state of mind too. If you're happy, you're going to have a more sexual desire. If you're sad, you're not. And I think that, yeah, the Dana Whites and the Joe Rogans who can afford testosterone therapy. So, you know, the way we talk about HRT, hormonal replacement therapy for females, like men do naturally go through some an andropause, say, where they're not making as much testosterone as they get older. And that's why people like Joe can, you know, inject himself with testosterone and feel great. But he is like doctors. He can afford doctors to take blood tests regularly. And there's people that would, if they get it on the black market, they could really disrupt their lives by doing it, because you can get testosterone rage. It'll also shrink your testicles, because it tells your brain that your brain doesn't have to produce, or tells your brain tells your testicles it doesn't have to produce testosterone anymore, because you're getting it injected into you.
Balanced, like, in terms of our endocrine system.
100%.
Like, we need, like, you kick that out of sync there and you could have consequences that you mightn't even have thought of, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. So, like, there's lots of stuff on social media, and that's why, you know, I always say to people, like, follow whoever you want, but listen to very few, you know, because sometimes the messages can get mixed and people think that they can just go on testosterone and their lives will be totally miraculously changed.
But you know, you can go to your doctor now. A man can, or a woman can go into their doctor and get their tests done and get their testosterone checked.
Yeah.
And if they want to go on testosterone patches, they can get these patches where you stick them on your arm. And there's a slow release of testosterone into your body.
But I think that you have to have, like, low testosterone baseline for that to happen. I don't think doctors are just going to be throwing them.
When you get your bloods back, it has to meet a certain level for them to be able to prescribe. But it is something that's coming in.
Yeah.
That's even here in Ireland.
And I do see something like that coming in and being as important as, say, HRT might be for females too. But I think it'll be a few years yet. And, you know, whatever's happening in the States, we're always a little bit behind.
Yeah. Explain HRT for females then. Like, what's the purpose of it? At what age should a woman consider it? Or what type of women's circumstance should consider it?
So HRT is hormonal replacement therapy. And females, from the minute we're conceived, have estrogen receptors all over our body from our head to our toe. So basically, as we get older, so as we're getting into our 40s and beyond, our estrogen levels are naturally declining. And that can have a huge impact on a female's life. So we always think of menopausal women as these hot and sweaty and, you know, old looking. But actually, it's like women like me, I'm 43. So, you know, I'm definitely perimenopausal. And, you know, people say, oh, it's when your periods change and stuff. But actually, the psychological symptoms can happen a lot sooner. So you can start having sleeping issues. You can be fatigued easily, panicked, anxiety, low mood, low libido is huge. Vaginal issues such as vaginal dryness and that. And people don't talk about it. And people think, as I said, of much older women, but actually it's in the 40s, even late 30s, that all these hormonal changes are happening internally. And women's fertility naturally declines post the age of 35 anyway. The reason being, you know, the hormonal changes that are going on. So I always say to women, if your life is impacted in any way, you know, if your quality of life isn't what you want it to be, certainly go and talk to your doctor about it, and go and talk to a female specialist, like a woman's health specialist, because you may have an amazing doctor that's dealt with you your whole life, but they may just not know a lot about the menopause. And really, a lot of people are upskilling now because menopause is quite the topic at the minute.
And people don't have to just suffer on.
No. And I would say that to anyone of any walk of life. Like, don't let things fester and get in on you.
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, though.
There's
absolutely no shame. And talking to people about it, too, that can often be a help. I'm sure you guys have had that in your lives.
Yeah, of course. Like, listen, it takes a man to really open up, really, and tell people how he's feeling. And what that does then, it opens up the door for the next man to say, do you know what? Yeah, this is how I'm feeling too, and this is happening to me. But while we were chatting there, I was looking at these.
Oh, yeah.
You have, are one of these for women going?
Yeah.
The
yellow ones. That's the menopause and perimenopause one. Yeah, it's called Meno and Peri. So it has the lion's mane mushroom in it for the, you know, the brain fog that women can sometimes get, and concentration, makes them feel a little bit more like themselves. And it has chromium for metabolism, vitamin D and K2 for our bones, because our bone density decreases as we get older as well. And then it has your B12 for psychological function and your magnesium for tardive fatigue. So it's got everything in one. So it's a good bit of support from women. And like, women message me going, oh my God, my libido has increased, my husband's delighted. Like, it's not actually increasing your libido. What it's doing is making you feel a little bit more like yourself. And if you're sleeping well and you're a little bit happier, of course your libido is going to be up. So
I'm putting that into my pamphlet.
You definitely won't be getting nothing.
You can actually open the captions and sprinkle in, so she'll have no idea. Give her a double dose. Give her a double dose.
What's life like for you today? What's it like making the transition from working in a pharmacy to running your own business?
That's great.
Being an influencer.
I know, the influencer. I don't like that word.
I know.
But yeah, I know. Yeah. We considered one, but
better than a blogger, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I suppose, and look, it's great. Like, I mean, I love what I do. And I was building my Instagram kind of platform for years before it actually, you know, it took off during COVID. But the reason why I went online in the first instance was because I've always had people ask me the same questions all the time as a pharmacist, you know, and my friends and family always sending me pictures of this rash or that rash. But actually, the light bulb moment was, as I was breastfeeding my third boy there. He was about, I don't know what age he was, maybe about like nearly one or something. And I got a picture in from a friend on my mobile phone, and no warning, this, it was her husband's testicles, right? And she goes, what's this on it, right? So she had taken a picture of her husband's testicles, and she was underneath him when she took the picture, right? So she took the picture. He was standing above her with his legs open. So the picture of the testicles were like face on, and he was looking down into the camera. So his face was like blurry in the background, right? these are people that we went for dinner with. Like, I can't look that man in the eye anymore. That's a sight you can't unsee. So I thought, Jesus. And it was only jock itch. She just needed a bit of antifungal cream. She probably thought I was going to eat him for an STI, like, playing away or something. Oh, yeah. But anyway, so it made me think, Jesus, you know, this is something, it's really simple to me. I know exactly what it is, but loads of people don't know what simple ways to treat simple ailments. So that's why I decided to go online. I didn't put the picture of his balls online. Yeah. That wasn't my first post, but that's how it all started.
Like, when you're eating food, you don't check your notifications.
I know.
So tell us, is there something that you think is maybe relevant for to speak about at the podcast here now as well? Is there something that you have, maybe something that you wanted to talk about yourself?
I didn't really think about that, actually. I suppose I would like to get across to people, like, so I go around the country giving talks to women, especially about their health and empowering their health and talking to them about their anatomy and stuff. And I bring a vulva puppet with me.
I see your vulva got a lot of action last time.
We've all got loads of action at Wellfest. But so I suppose what I like to get across to people, to men and women, because I love men. Like, I have three sons and I've a husband and I've brothers and a lovely dad. But to everyone, that if there's something wrong with you, don't just leave it. If you have a mole, go and get it checked out. You know, don't let something fester. And if your quality of life has been impacted in any way, even 10%, go and talk to someone about it. Mm. And people might say, oh, well, you've just said there's a huge waiting list in the, you know, for mental health services. And that's correct. But your GP can always be your first port of call if there's an issue, or your pharmacist, but certainly even just talking to family and friends is so very important. And then what I'd say to people as well is, so I was in the pharmacy profession for 20 years, doing Instagram on the side, doing a little bit of public speaking with this supplement business on the back burner. But like, I was really nervous leaving my job. I was in a steady, good income job, and I had to jump ship last April to do it, and I'm so glad that I did. So what I'd say to someone is, just you just need to go with your gut and do it. And like, you know,
there must have been a lot of fear in relation to that.
Oh God, absolutely. Yeah, I was. And like, it's funny as well, because I'm in a business that's predominantly run by men, and I have been in situations where I've been in rooms with people and I've been told I'm a great girl. Oh, you're a great girl. So what I'd say to women is, as well, you need to have tough skin as well. You need just to be able to stand up for yourself as well. Or I've been in situations where people, so I might have brought my husband in with me and they'd talk to him, you know, that kind of way, not me, but I'm the business owner and kind of the face of it. So it's a funny dynamic. So you have to keep kind of trying to push that door open. And I suppose it's like anyone, when they're a bit of an outsider or they're not your typical, you know, business person, you need to be constantly pushing for yourself, no more than I'm sure you've had to push for yourselves over the years.
Great message there, like, because I similarly I took a walked away from my job in January, you know, with my contract and all the bills and whistles that came with it, to pursue, I suppose, what I was passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's working out now.
Yeah.
But like, you have to take a leap of faith. and life is too short to take, make a go for. If it doesn't work out, there's plenty of work there.
I think, and you'll never regret trying something out, because and this idea of worrying about what other people think, I don't think we should be so worried about what other people think, because people actually don't really care.
They're
more worried about what they think about themselves.
Exactly. So I think just go for it. If you have an idea, you just do it.
Yeah.
And there's, I always say as well, there's room at the table for everyone, and you don't need to elbow other people out of the way to make your space for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that what really works well is collaborating and chatting to people and networking and making friends and having those conversations, because you'll always learn something from meeting people. Like, this is the first time I've met you guys today, and I said to you, I want to come into the prisons with you and do talks. So it's amazing what you can do when you actually are open to people. Absolutely. And you're open to meeting people and talking, and there's definitely room for everyone. And that would be my message. Go for it. If there's any, do mad stuff.
And this industry is probably one of the best industries to be in at the moment, because it's helping people to maybe feel better about themselves, so their lives can be improved in any way. And that is exactly where we are at the moment in time, is people are looking at their lives and they're looking at ways maybe
they can
feel better.
Yeah.
You know, and they understand, no, I don't have to feel like this all my life anymore.
And they can be in control of their own destiny too. And that's not, I'm not saying that as a kind of a cliche thing, but you can absolutely make a decision today that's going to have knock-on effects for your future. And it can be just something really small, like, I'm actually going to get up and go for a walk today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and do that every day. Or, you know, I think that's just so, like, even myself, I find myself with growing this business over the last year, I haven't had a minute. Like, it's 24/7. And, you know, you're always seeing ways that things could be done better. And I'm, you know, there's always emails to answer. But I was feeling pretty bad about the fact that I was feeling like a pretty, pretty bad mother, because I was like, I'm not getting time with my kids, or I'm always batting them away. So I made a conscious effort to say, every single day I'm going to walk my children to school, walk one fella up to the train and walk the other two to school, so I can have those little chats to them every day. And it makes me feel good, because it makes me feel I've spent time with them and I've heard their little worries, or I've let them talk at me, which is what they mostly do.
Be a good listener.
I know. Oh yeah, you do. You need to be a really good listener, don't you? Or what you need to do is nod and go, at the right moment. Because sometimes you'll do it and they're like, are you even listening to me at all, Mum? And I'm like, what? And they're like, well, I just asked you for like a McDonald's after school. Yeah. And so I did that, and that makes me feel good about myself then. So I suppose if there is a problem in your life, try and find the simplest solution to it. And just people out there, they might say, oh Jesus, walking your kids to school, like, that's not doing anything, but they are so happy. That's all they want. They don't want me to take them bowling or to the cinema or this. They just want me to spend time with them. So that was my easy out, and I felt really good about that. So it was those little decisions that everyone can make in their lives to make themselves feel better too. You know,
if people want to contact you and say hi, give you feedback or connect, how can they do that?
Oh yeah, at Fabulous Pharmacist is my Instagram handle. So I'm working out of that at the minute, dressing up like Wonder Woman, doing all kinds of mad stuff. I was saying to someone, I'm actually living my best life at the minute, because I always wanted to be an actress, but I knew I was never good enough to actually, you know, make a career out of it. So I'm actually now in my 40s, living out my best life on Instagram.
Yeah. Can I ask you something? You come across as a really happy person and very energetic. Your energy is very easy to be around.
Okay.
Have you always been like that?
Yeah, I think I've been lucky enough to have a really good mum and dad, and you know, my start in life was very privileged, and I'll be the first to say that. I had a solid family that I grew up in, you know, and with my brothers and sisters, and I went to school and I studied hard. So, but I'm lucky I was able to do that. Some kids aren't, and I was in school with people that weren't able to do that. They didn't come from those kind of families either. So, I am generally quite happy. I have had some people say to me, geez, what passed you in the street there? And you're just smiling to yourself. But yeah,
isn't it a great way to be?
It is.
Jesus,
you'll be getting me in trouble now. I'll be admitting all my things. But yeah, I suppose I've always been kind of a glass half full type of person. So
well, it was a pleasure collaborating.
Oh, great. Yeah, it was lovely chatting to you, lads.
Thanks.
And we'll see everybody next week.
God bless.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.